Chase Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, hanging out with you as we've been reacting all show long. 52-49, the final. Tennessee beats Alabama for the first time in a long time since 2005. We say hello to David Ubben, who covers college football for The Athletic, but he's been around the Vols program for a while. David, how you doing?
Pretty good, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I enjoyed your story, the goalpost journey through Knoxville as it finds its final resting place in the river. And I, you know, we talked about this earlier. You're going to have people that go, you shouldn't storm the field and you shouldn't tear the goalpost down and all that stuff. I think it was really cool. Vols fans had waited so long for this moment, and you covered the team and you know about some of the down years that they went through, but what was it like from your perspective to see them finally knock off the beast that is Alabama?
I mean, I think you could sort of feel it in the crowd. You know, it was interesting. I was talking to some of the people during the game. You know, the Florida game felt like, you know, not a lot. I mean, you want to win that game, obviously, but if you lose, it's like, oh, this team really is just not, you know, as good as we thought. You know, Florida isn't a great team, and if you lose that game, it's like, ah, this is, you know, this hopes are not going to happen. But Alabama was kind of a everything to gain, nothing to lose type of game. And when you win it, you see what it's like for that crowd to really gain a lot. It didn't seem like there was a lot of nervousness. You know, you could feel the gut punch in the stadium when they had the scoop and score late in the fourth quarter. But they rallied, and you didn't sense a lot of kind of nervous moments, you know, from this team. They were the better team on Saturday. I think the crowd certainly contributed to a lot of the mistakes that we saw from Alabama. And I think ultimately, you know, we've always talked about anybody around the Tennessee program, you know, when this program, you know, has some success, this fan base has been so hungry that they're going to embrace it in a crazy way because they've kept showing up and kept supporting, you know, even when this program has been struggling. And now we're seeing them get some success, but also getting some success in a year where, you know, certainly nobody expected this level. And I think everybody feels like they're sort of playing with house money at this point. And you know, I wrote about this morning at The Athletic, you look at the playoff road for this team, and it is wide open. You know, I think at this point, you know, Tennessee has just got to take care of business. You know, you don't get blown out by Georgia, or you win that game, which is certainly a winnable game for Tennessee. And then as long as you don't lose to Kentucky or South Carolina, you got a great shot of getting to the playoff. And that is kind of crazy to think about right now.
Well, and another thing that's crazy to think about is Tennessee could potentially have its first ever Heisman Trophy winner in Hendon Hooker. Now, there's a long way to go, but he's gone from being a dark horse candidate to being a legitimate candidate in the course of the last few weeks. I mean, what do you how big of a chance do you give him for, at this point, getting the call to go to New York and then ultimately winning the thing?
I mean, a really good chance. I think at this point, you know, he's the front runner. You know, our Heisman straw poll for our staff, I mean, he was number one on my list this week. And I think ultimately, you know, unless he has a, you know, out of character three interception, you know, 170 yard game where he's completing 50% of his passes against Georgia, where he's a big reason why they lose to Georgia if they do. You know, Tennessee could still lose to Georgia if he has a normal type of game. And then does what he's been doing the rest of the season to everybody else, he's definitely going to be in New York City, and he's definitely going to have a chance to win the whole thing if he's got Tennessee sitting there at the end of the season at 11-1 or 12-0, and their only loss is to Georgia. That's a pretty good resume, and he's been the biggest reason why Tennessee is in the position that it is in right now. So I like his odds. I mean, you're going to have one – you know, all it takes is one really bad game. And if you have one, you know, maybe you'll have a chance to make up for it if he does beat Georgia, which I think, again, Tennessee will have a good shot to do later this season. But, I mean, he's the front runner right now, and he'll have a great shot if he keeps doing what he's doing. And he hasn't really shown anything to suggest that there's a clunker coming. So a good time to be in the Hendon Hooker business.
We'll talk with David Ubben of The Athletic. Go check out his column. The best, the worst of the SEC, Tennessee path to the playoffs open. Looking at this team, and the celebration was great. From storming the field to ripping down a goalpost to throwing a goalpost in the river, all of that was great and wonderful. Do you think that was more so, it wasn't because they beat Alabama. Alabama was sort of like just a byproduct of it. But it was because of all of the years of just bad football and constant rotation with these coaches. And this team, ever since 1998, just never got back to respectability, not just in the SEC, but I think in the country.
I mean, I think it's all those things. I think, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, certainly I think the Alabama rivalry has diminished in importance, especially for younger fans, because of, you know, 15 years where Tennessee has not been competitive more often than not. You know, I think it's that's part of it, is you know, the rivalry was some of that. But, you know, ultimately it's still a win over a, you know, top three team. Tennessee had not beaten the top three team since 2005, I believe, LSU. And since 2012, Tennessee has not come within single digits of a top, at least top five team, you know, single digits in a decade. They've had plenty of chances over that span. So I think it's a combination of beating a good team, establishing your own legitimacy. I mean, this isn't a one-off. This is a launching pad for Tennessee, like I wrote this morning, to having a legitimate shot at a playoff. And again, if you beat Alabama, you can beat anybody. So Tennessee, you know, I certainly think they've got a long way to go to have any real conversation about national championships. But they've got the best resume in the country. I don't know that Tennessee's the best team in the country. I think you could make that case. But they've got the best resume. If you want to vote Tennessee number one because of their resume, you probably should. Pitt, Florida, LSU, Alabama. Nobody's got better wins than Tennessee does right now. So I think it's that. It's beating Alabama, beating your rival. It's upsetting a team. And it's establishing your own team as a legitimate force and sort of an announcement that the Vols are back. You know, we'll see what that means for the next 5 years. But for this year, Tennessee is a scary, scary team with an offense that is the best unit of anybody in the country. You know, you talk about the units that defined the season. Last year, it was Georgia's defense. Georgia's defense was the scariest thing on the football field the entirety of the 2021 season, and that's why Georgia won a national championship. This year, Tennessee's got the best offense in the country, and they've got the best unit in the country, and that, I think, will take you a pretty long way. And right now for Tennessee, taking them into the top three, the 6-0, and now with the inside track to the playoff.
Now, David, do you think there was this concerted effort? Because the way I saw that defense playing, now they played really well last week, but the way they play and how aggressive they were on defense, I have not seen that all season. The aggressiveness of the defensive line and the blitzing and even playing on that borderline as far as personal fouls where they were hitting, you know, Bryce Young as he released the football. And, you know, you can't get close to the quarterback anymore. But it just seemed like they had this concerted effort to be extremely aggressive against that offense.
Well, I think you have to be. You know, you can't sit back and drop 7 or 8 against Bryce Young because he can extend plays. And you can do some things. And I think ultimately that's the way you want to play Alabama, because Alabama does not have game breakers at receiver this year. Their receiver group is really, really average. They do not have anybody that really scares you, which is kind of amazing, because I think they had 6 first-round picks at receiver in 4 years going into 2021 or 2022. They had that crazy run of receivers. There is not that guy on this roster. You know, their number one receiver, Jermaine Burton, was Georgia's third leading receiver last year behind a tight end, a freshman tight end. So nobody really scares you. I think Tennessee recognized that. You know, when you know you've got to pressure Bryce Young, you've got to get him uncomfortable. They did that pretty frequently. He had an incredible game, being elusive and extending plays with his feet and making plays downfield. But he was not comfortable for that game, and Tennessee forced him out of there. And they don't have the receivers like Tennessee does, like a Jalin Hyatt that can make you pay over the top. He did that over and over at Alabama. Alabama doesn't have that guy. You know, I think ultimately you could talk about, you know, Alabama has a better roster and Tennessee wouldn't have that many players. It would start for Alabama. That may be true, but there's a huge gap at receiver because Tillman, Brew McCoy, and Jalin Hyatt, those three are better than any receiver on Alabama's roster right now. That's just true. And that is quite a place to be, and I think Tennessee showed that on Saturday.
David Ubben is with us from The Athletic. We're talking about the aftermath of Tennessee's big win over Alabama. David, I loved the article about the journey of the goalposts. I had a question. Do you think if you're the owner of the car that got the windshield chipped by the goalpost, like when you call the insurance adjuster, like, and you say, my windshield got chipped, it was a goalpost, like, what do you think the response is from the person on the other end of the phone?
So the one that I saw was, there was like it's like a cart inside the stadium. It's not the medical cart. I don't even know what you'd call it. It's like half ATV, half golf cart with like a real windshield. But it's definitely, the goalpost definitely took a chip out of it. So I don't know what the insurance claim looks like on that. It didn't really crack it necessarily. I mean, maybe it is now. But I would have to defer to the insurance agents that are listening to offer some expertise. So there's a free idea for you for a segment later this week.
Oh, yeah. I can guarantee you there's more than one phone call going to the insurance about somebody's car somewhere with some shenanigans that happened. But how did you put that story together? That's a really interesting thing. I mean, you can only be at one place at one time. Like, how did you put it all together?
So I knew earlier in the week, I was like, if Tennessee pulls this off, I'm just going to follow the goalposts. I think I had planned on that like Wednesday, because it's going to be more interesting than anything else you can write about the game. It just is. Because there's a ton of national media, there's a ton of people. You have to be able to cut through the noise and write something interesting about a game. And there's only so many things you can write about a game like that. And I knew it was going to be a crazy, crazy scene. And I think the story I thought was going to be the breakthrough for this fan base that has wanted this release for so, so long. So, you know, I knew earlier in the week I wanted to do that. Saturday morning I told my editor and our Alabama writer and Joe Rex, I was like, hey, if they pull this off, I'm just going to follow the goalpost. That's going to be the plan. So that was the plan. So I was on the field after, and then when they stormed the field, I've never been on the field where there's that many people. So it was crazy where I couldn't really move and follow what I wanted to follow. And the curve, the crossbar that they took down from the south end zone was easier to see because it was over the people, so I could follow that. But the actual upright, one of which, and both of them ended up at Fraternity Row, one of them had a brief baptism in the Tennessee River. Those could not, you couldn't really see those. So I followed the one that was the south end zone crossbar. That's the one that the cops stole. The other two uprights from the north end zone ended up in the stands. They tried to go up and over the concourse, and the cops took those as well. So I was out there with the cops for a while after they took the crossbar, and then ended up having to follow the other upright, which ended up on Cumberland, track that down, asked a bunch. I walked probably 3 miles.
So you got your steps
from the stadium. Yeah, cut through the stadium, got down to the strip, just kept asking cops where it went, and followed it. Talked to a couple people, they followed it. They said, oh, they took them to Fraternity Row. So I go to Fraternity Row, and I come upon the guys that I took the featured photo of, and they were sawing through it, through the upright in the courtyard of I believe it was the Sigma Chi house. And I asked them, hey, can you walk me through everything that happened tonight? Because I was stopped with the cops, and I thought I had stopped the full thing. I didn't realize the upright had gotten as far as it was, because it's kind of a crazy scene, and I couldn't really move as well as I would have liked to. So they gave me the full play-by-play. They had a guy with them. Shout out to Ben Gleason, who had taken some photos. He let us use the photos that he had taken. I got the play-by-play, got all that stuff, and so I was able to pretty reliably track the journey of the north goalpost, which remained intact, the south goalpost, which was broken into three pieces, one of which the cops stopped, and the one upright went straight to Fraternity Row. The other one took a baptism in the Tennessee River, and then a dozen people jumped in the river. I don't think that's incredibly safe.
Not super smart.
In the Tennessee River. If I was 20 and invincible, I probably would have done the same thing if I was a Tennessee fan, but the safety of which is probably debatable. Fished it out of the river, goalpost float, which I think people don't necessarily realize. I'm not sure even I quite realize that. Goalpost float, they fished it back out, took it back to Fraternity Row, and then sawed it off, and there's pieces of the goalpost, and that is a very valuable piece of memorabilia that I imagine those folks are going to have for decades.
Someday, again, David, there's going to be
the best sport.
Oh, yeah. Someday, David, the follow-up story for you will be, I don't know if Tennessee has an archaeology department, but there's going to be like a an archaeological dig to find every piece of the goalpost, and like the dinosaur, you put it back together and you put it near the rock on campus. Like, this is the goalpost back intact.
Well, this is, again, I mean, I think this is what we try to do at the Athletic, is tell stories that you can't get anywhere else, and it's more fun for me. Like, doing this and walking around, as painful as it was on my feet, and I woke up Sunday in some real pain, feeling my age. I'm only 35. That was in some pain, man. It was rough. It was a lot of walking, a lot of steps. But that was a lot more fun than, you know, sitting in a room. And especially considering, as I understand it, Josh Heupel was like 90 minutes late to the press conference because he had, obviously he was trapped on the field and then smoked something. Cigars, took a bunch of photos in the locker room and talked to the team, and a bunch of team was stuck out there. So the guys were sitting there chasing these guys around and watching some fans get arrested, and that was an interesting scene outside the stadium as well. That was a lot more fun than sitting in a media room waiting for, you know, Josh Heupel to say the same things to 25, 30 people in a room that he's going to say to everybody else. So these are the kind of stories that I have a lot of fun chasing down, and that was quite a Saturday night. One I will... I'm sure Tennessee fans won't forget it anytime soon, but myself, for different reasons, it was just an experience and being able to do those kind of things. I am not going to forget that night anytime soon in my life. So, man, just a fun night. I think the best college football game I've ever seen in person. One of the best of my lifetime, the best environment I've been to, and one of the most memorable nights of work I've ever had. I think it surpassed the 2010 Nebraska-Texas A&M game as the craziest night I've had in this field.
I can only imagine. David, it was a great story. And we look forward to your follow-up 9 months from now when you're talking to new parents of little Hendons and Jalen's and Josh's, because I have a feeling there's going to be quite a few of those that we'll be hearing about 9 months from now. But thanks so much for the time. We'll do it again soon.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
David Ubben of The Athletic. If you haven't read it, go read The Journey
it's
of the
hilarious.
It's
hilarious.
It is awesome.
I want to know if maybe somebody, some people can call in Texas.
Yeah,
were
I want to
hear
from
some people that were there.
Yes.
Did anybody
call
this?
In, please.
Did anybody walk around with the goalposts like David did?
615-737-1025. If you were there Saturday night, we want to hear from you as Tennessee beats Alabama. We'll continue that discussion. But first, Willie, tell us about Loan Pronto.
All right, let's talk Loan Pronto. They have got what you need. If you are looking to pay off credit cards right now, if you need cash for the holidays, or you just need to pay some bills in general, Loan Pronto has the program, the all-new Express Equity Line of Credit program. It's just what you need. It's great. You can keep your low mortgage rate and still get cash out from your home's equity. You don't have to do a full home refi. You can tap a small portion of the equity you have and enjoy the super low rate. So with Loan Pronto's Express Equity Credit Line, you can close in 7 to 10 days. It's very quick and easy. It's all digital. Most of the time, you won't even need an appraisal on your home. So call right now and find out more about it. 615-499-5780 is the phone number. We did this in the Donick House here recently. They were great to work with. 615-499-5780 or go to loanpronto.com. Do it now before the holidays and get your financial game in order. Equal housing lender, NMLS 166-1781, subject to lender approval.
Chase, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Chase McKay, Willie Donick, Derek Mason with you, talking uniforms and
we're over here, names of fashionistas over
names of babies that were probably conceived Saturday night into Sunday morning in Knoxville.
That's just one of those, if you're a Tennessee fan, you're going to have memories forever. Yes. So I would love to hear if people
hear from
were at the game,
there,
or even if you were just watching with some people, what was the aftermath like for you? 615-737-1025. I'm particularly interested if you were at the game. Mm-hmm. What was your strategy? Like, if you were sitting way up there, did you get on the field? Did you follow parts of the goalposts? Like, what did you do?
I'm trying to find.
Or were you one of those people like, hey, we can beat the traffic out of here if we run back to our car?
If you were that person, like.
That was not one of those games.
No. I'm trying to see
but
if
I can like
find.
But that's
like
those commercials about you don't want to turn into your parents. Like, be that guy. Hey, we can be the first guy out of here if we park here.
No, you don't want to be your parents.
So I saw a tweet, or it may have been on Instagram, but I was just rolling, and I'm trying to see if I can find it. But it was a church that tweeted out that said, for all of you that prayed, it was like showing the stands right before the kick. For those of you that were praying and saying all these things that you were willing to do, our services begin at 9 a.m. And I was like, that is so spot on and perfect.
Yeah, you had a bunch of people, please, if they make this field goal, I would do this.
I will go to church every week. We start at 9. That was great.
So make sure you're there.
615-737-1025. Robbie Anderson has been traded to the Cardinals.
Wow, that was quick.
That was really quick.
But they now, how much of the money do they still have to, you know, be responsible for? There has to be a dead cap hit there somewhere.
Probably. Schefter is reporting that Cardinals wide receiver Hollywood Brown suffered a potentially season-ending foot injury Sunday, per sources. He is undergoing further testing today to determine the extent of the injury.
You want to talk about a nightmare. The Cardinals yesterday in Seattle, it was a nightmare. It would be two good plays and then five bad plays and then four good plays and then a fumble. But that explains it, because they're going to get DeAndre Hopkins back on Thursday. Mm-hmm. So you're thinking, why would you need him and Robbie Anderson? And it's a fair question to ask in general. Mm-hmm. Why would you really want Robbie Anderson after what happened yesterday? It was going on basically simultaneously. The Panthers game against the Rams, as well as the Arizona debacle in Seattle. Mm-hmm. So maybe
that division's wide open, though. Like, all four teams have a chance to win it right now.
The Rams still, you know, they're struggling. They don't look the same.
No,
they got it done yesterday.
No, but the 49ers, the Rams, the Seahawks are all 3-3, and then the Cardinals are 2-4.
It's a really bizarre division.
And I think
the 49ers got whipped in Atlanta yesterday. Got whipped.
Kingsbury's probably if they miss the playoffs, I'd say Kingsbury's gone.
Let's ask Tim about this when we have him on. Because he's been on this from the start. They are always disorganized. Mm-hmm. The Cardinals. Even when they're winning, they are very discombobulated. They are they're always having to call timeouts. They make mental mistakes. They don't seem to be on the same page, and it's catching up to them right now. But like you said, they're not out of it. They've still it's a wide open division.
What's crazy too, look at the NFC South. Look what team is right there in the
mix. How
about
the NFC North? How about Green Bay?
Yeah.
They got destroyed by the Jets. Destroyed.
But yeah, Green Bay, Tampa lost. Yeah.
Tampa looks very ordinary.
I saw another funny tweet that said, how you like to be Tom Brady? You trade being married to Giselle Bundchen to be under 500. Probably going to miss the playoffs. Or be a 500 team. But how about Marcus Mariota and Arthur Smith, what they're doing in Atlanta?
They're much, much better. The Jets, the Giants, and Atlanta, in some order, were among the five worst. In anybody's poll of when you did power rankings, those three would be found in the bottom five of every single one. They're all way better than people thought.
The Giants are second in their division at 5-1.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Unreal. Real quick, TJ wants to weigh in. Said he stormed the field in 98. TJ, welcome in.
Hey, thanks, guys. Appreciate you.
Yep.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was there. 98 was my freshman year. I was born and raised in New Jersey. My very first game was that Florida game where we stormed the field.
Oh, my.
And it's a night you'll never forget, and make you a Vol for life for sure.
So where were you yesterday? I mean, Saturday.
Saturday I had a bunch of my buddies. I'm very fortunate they all live here in Nashville now. We had a big party at the house, and I may or may not have done a huge belly flop into my pool. We hate that kid. You can find it somewhere on the internet, I promise.
Very
Thanks
nice.
For the call,
okay.
TJ.
Thank you.
I want to hear more stories like this.
It was well deserved.
615-737-1025. What are some stories from the other day? Did anybody go in the river? I'd love to hear from some people on that.
No.
Well, I got a text from somebody that said, I've jumped in the Tennessee River and it's fine. So,
you sure it's fine? You sure you're
according
fine?
According to this person.
Let me ask some of your friends.
615. Well, you both know this person. 615-737-1025. We'll continue to take your calls and texts. Where were you Saturday? watching Tennessee-Alabama. How did you celebrate? We'll do that next. But can you beat Vegas this football season? Superbook Sports gives you the chance every week to go head-to-head with the best odds makers in Vegas. There's no fancy computer algorithms. There's no guys across the pond setting the lines. It's just the best team of odds makers in the business behind the counter at the Superbook in Las Vegas. Plus, Superbook features some of the best odds boosts and promo bets anywhere. So all you have to do is download the Superbook Sports app, or you can visit superbook.com and start your battle against Vegas just like me. I made it my official sports book. I placed some wagers on college football, on the NFL. Look, it is the best, and it's so easy to use. The interface is you open it up, you pick your sport, you pick your game, you set your bet, boom, you're done. It is that simple. So do like I do. Make it your official sports book. Download Superbook Sports now. Visit superbook.com for terms and conditions. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Chase Willie, D-Mates, 102.5-106.3, the game. Predators are back on the ice, apparently.
It's time to get back to the broadcast area.
It throws me off every time I hear that.
If I'm hanging out, talk to people, and in the hallway, and I hear this, I got to get back.
Speaking of the Preds fans hang out before the Preds games at the Superbook Lounge and Landshark Bar and Grill, Margaritaville on Broadway with 102.5-106.3 The Game. You can place your bets with Superbook, like I do, and enjoy great food and drink specials. Plus, you can enter for a chance to win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Preds home game tomorrow night back in Smashville against the LA Kings. A late start on ESPN, 8:30, or ESPN Plus.
Nope, it's on the mothership tomorrow night on ESPN. That's why it's 8:30.
Gotcha.
Second half of a doubleheader.
Very, very cool. 615-737-1025, taking your calls on the Vols win. Let's go to Scott. Scott has some stats, I believe. Scott, welcome in.
Yeah, hey, guys. Welcome. I'm driving back from Chattanooga. Went over to watch the game of my dad. He took me to my first game when I was in elementary school. So I'm heading back to Memphis, and I heard your radio station. But, yeah, I don't know if y'all saw the numbers. You know, we had lost for 15 years. When we got the ball back of the Alabama and Mississippi field goal, there's 15 seconds on the clock. This is 22. We had two passes with 2 seconds left. The kicker was number 40. He kicked a 40-yard field goal. Peyton Manning's number is number 16. They were giving him grief before the game about being a jinx. Guess what? Alabama couldn't get a hold of him as number 16, and they can't get a hold of number 16 anymore.
All right. That's good stuff there. Thanks, Scott.
I thought he was going to say there, and there are 16 pieces of the goalpost in my room.
But let's not, because this is what I've been
hearing. Glad Peyton's off the hook.
This is what I've been hearing, and because now they are closer. They have switched lanes from, this team's good. They're really good. They switched that lane from, they can play in a new, one of the bigger bowls, to the lane where there's only like four or five other teams. The lane and the path to a national championship. Now Tennessee has gotten over in that lane now.
Yes.
With Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan.
Everything
Alabama.
Changes.
Yes. Now everything changes. But here, the last time UT won a national championship, people, T. Martin was the quarterback, okay? I love Peyton Manning. Y'all know how much I love Peyton Manning. That's my, if I could have played with any other quarterback but Steve McNair, it would have been Peyton Manning. Caught one pass from him in the Pro Bowl. It's a long pass, too. I appreciate him because when I retired, he wrote a letter. And I'm sure he's done that to several other players as well. But he appreciated.
He wrote you a letter?
Yeah. He appreciated the competition back and forth, you know, with the Titans and the Colts or Baltimore when he was with the Colts, and then subsequently when he went to Denver. But y'all won a national championship with T. Martin, people. Let's not forget that.
I don't think they forget
that. I think they are forgetting that part.
No, I don't think so.
Because we're hearing Peyton, but the last time y'all were in this position was with T. Martin at quarterback. And Peerless Price at receiver. I forgot who the running backs were. So probably some damn good running backs.
Jamal Lewis got hurt. He tore his ACL during the season.
So is that Travis Henry?
I believe it was Travis Henry that came in and was the main guy. Must have been nice to have.
Exactly.
Him as your backup.
Exactly.
They were pretty
good. But I just want to emphasize that.
I get where you're coming from, but I don't think He's always going to be beloved. He's always going to be the favorite son because of what he did in his 4 years there. But this is an interesting point because you just mentioned switching lanes. Mm-hmm. Here's what they have to do with this. No matter what happens the rest of the way, I think we can all agree that they got something special brewing. And a lot of that, you know, if you go talent for talent, Alabama, that Alabama team that just lost, mm-hmm. this Tennessee team, Alabama's probably got more talent. That's just the way it is.
At least on defense.
However, what Josh Heupel has done in a short amount of time to get some new guys in there by working the transfer portal, like a Hendon Hooker, and to change the culture and get all those guys believing that they can win and believing that they can compete, that goes such a long way, not only for this team, but for teams to come, because if I'm a prospective recruit and I'm hearing about that culture and I'm seeing them get those wins and I'm seeing the results, I'm going, you know what? I want to go play for that guy. I want to go there.
That's right. And it kind of builds. You have a chance to really catch the wave of momentum.
And they haven't been able to do that until potentially right now.
Well, yeah. And there's also other challenges that come with it, in that now if you lose, it's big news, right? Yeah, and if you're not in the national picture, people are like, wait, what happened? Wait, we just bet out of them. Why can't we? But you got to do it every year. So these are all good things, mm-hmm. but the change of expectations comes with a lot of challenges, not just good benefits, but also challenges as well. And one other thing on T. Martin, and Tennessee fans know this, but not only did they win in 98, they had every opportunity to win it again the next year. Yeah. Remember they lost at Arkansas Arkansas sort of got revenge. Remember the Clint Sterner fumble where Arkansas had them beat in 98. A year later, they beat Tennessee when they weren't quite as good. Tennessee was, if they win that game, they're probably right back in the national title game.
Yep.
They almost won two under T. Martin.
Yep.
Yeah, well, that, but this is what I think I want to see moving forward. I want to see how they come out this next game. Is there still a little hangover for the next game? I think they're going to win. I think they're going to win handily. But I want to see if they still come up with that same aggression.
I'm glad they have UT Martin in between.
But even that, it's like, because you can play a UT Martin and you can beat them by 30
points. Wait, we were just talking about T. Martin. Now we're talking about UT Martin.
You can beat them by 30 points. But how sloppy is that win? Is it a win that you just completely dominated and you're riding a wave of what you did the week before and you just going? Or is it, it's still a little bit of that hangover in a bad way where, we win because we were just a better team, but there was a lot of sloppy football out there.
And how much do you let Hendon play?
You let him play until you get to a point where you know it's out of reach.
But he's probably got a half to.
But I guarantee you this. Josh Heupel understands, because people think individual accolades don't matter, but it matters in recruiting.
Oh, it matters.
It matters in recruiting. So Josh Heupel's hearing what's happening behind him in regards to Hendon Hooker. He's going to make sure that Hendon Hooker put up big numbers in the first half, because if Hendon Hooker ends up winning the Heisman or even going to New York, that's great for recruiting his next quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Because you know what, and those little things like that, like Josh Heupel can say that he's done something that Philip Fulmer was the last to do.
Uh-huh.
Beat Florida and Alabama in the same year.
Exactly.
Nobody else can say that. You know, Butch can't say it.
Mm-hmm.
Dooley can't say it.
Lane can't say it.
I mean, like, none of them. I mean, so, those little things matter. Real quick, let's get to Tony. He wants to weigh in on the Vols. Tony, welcome in.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Well, first of all, I'm going to put a sour note on this love fest everybody's got. I'm going to poo-poo on it.
Okay, here you go.
The controversial, I still call it controversial, pass interference, 3 minutes, 47 seconds to go in the game. Alabama's up by 7, 4th and 5, they intercept the pass in the end zone. The referee standing right at the play who's the side judge, I do think, does not throw the flag. I've went back and seen this in four different clips, four different angles, mini clips. He never throws the flag. That referee never threw the flag. Alabama takes the ball, goes all the way down to the 12-yard line, got control of the game, and then, as Gary Danielson said, wait a minute, there's a late flag. The flag come out so late, it came out when they were at least, the return man on the interception was 10 to 15 yards past the 5-yard line, which would put him at the 20 or 25. There's no flag and no picture I've seen. It had to be thrown from a referee 20-something yards away, and that would have given Alabama the ball at the 12 with a 7-point lead, 3 minutes, 47 seconds to go, probably going to score another touchdown or field goal, and they win the ball game. You haven't heard no one talk about that controversial interception because everybody says, well, it was another penalty on Alabama. Yes, Alabama got a lot of them. They did in the Texas game. One, it's one of their toe stumpers they've got this year. Tennessee also had a lot of penalties. But in that particular game, Tennessee to get 6 penalties, Alabama got 17. Come on. We've all been up there. We've seen it before. I've been up there watching Auburn games over the years and watched Vanderbilt games over the years in Knoxville. There's always that mysterious come out of wherever pocket flag dropped after the play's already gone downfield the other way.
All right.
It was still a great win by UT. It was an unbelievable atmosphere, but I still think there was the controversy of the game itself right there.
We will discuss it, Tony, coming up next. I think it's a great point for us to bring it up. We'll all give our opinions on it and continue to take your calls and text 615-737-1025. Chase William DeMace, 1025-1063, The Game. 615-737-1025, talking balls, Bama. Chase Willie DeMace here with you. We'll have NFL Zingers coming up at 1 o'clock with Nick Kieser. Tony made the call just a few minutes ago saying that it was a controversial call, the pass interference that negated the interception. We've been talking about it during the break. Vols fans are weighing in on the text line.
I mean, they have a right to.
Joey from Gallatin says, tell Tony to grow up, boo-hoo, on the slide and can't go down. Let's go, Vols. Look, Tony is a great listener and caller.
Yeah,
calls
sure.
in a lot. So he's entitled to his opinion. My quick opinion is I think it was pass interference, and I think they got the call right. Now, was the flag late? Yes, it was. But if that's because of a conversation that, you know, the thing that I think people forget sometimes is they can talk to each other. They have, you know, radio just like the NFL. They can, and then they huddle up and they'll talk it out. I think they got it right.
Mm-hmm.
That's my opinion. Right. I don't know what you guys think. I think they got it right.
I will give you my assessment at the time. And I was watching with no sound from the press box down in Dallas before the Predators game against the Stars. My first thought was, like Tony said, you didn't see a flag right away. I thought that there was contact. I was curious. I'm waiting. You know, you're watching the TV. You're waiting either for the announcer to say it or that yellow flag graphic to come up on the bottom right-hand corner of your screen. I'm watching for it. I'm watching for it. It was late. The other part that I would observe is, in my experience in watching football, when the ball is intercepted, especially by a player who's not involved in the contact, you almost never get the call. You just, the guy intercepted the ball. You don't get that call, especially late like that. I've seen times where it goes the other way. A guy might throw, he's thinking about throwing the flag, but the ball is intercepted by a different guy, and so you just let it go.
If
that's much more likely to happen than what happened. So I think it's a break for Tennessee, but at the same time, there was contact. It's not a bad call because there was interference.
No, it wasn't a bad call. It was the right call. When it happened, I'm like, didn't nobody see that pass interference that was just blatant right in front of the refs? Didn't nobody want to make that call? So once the play got going and you finally hear Gary Danielson say there's a flag on the field, albeit, yeah, it was late, but How many late flags have we seen in college football? It didn't matter if it was this game or any other game.
It happens.
It happens a lot. Like, a play get going, something happens, and then as the play is going down the field, you see a flag come out. And whether you are against the flag or for the flag, you're like, where did that flag come from? You know? Typically, I'm like, you know, what Chase said, typically they're usually communicating with one another to make sure, okay, was that? Yeah. Oh, okay. Did you see that? Yeah, I saw it. Okay, let's throw the flag. They can do that. They could have let that play go and decided, got together with whoever was in that part of the field. They could have got together and said, well, do you think that was a flag? Yeah, he did hold him, and he didn't look back for the ball. Okay, let's drop the flag. It's a flag. That's just the way it is. I can see if the defender had turned his head and looked for the ball and tipped it, and they had not caught a flag, I'd be like, that was just a good play. That was no flag there. But the guy wrapped his arms around around the receiver. It's like that was one of those calls that you make. Like, those are routine calls. You see it. Everybody in the building sees it. I don't care what time of game, what moment in the game it is. If a guy wraps his arm around another guy trying to catch the football and he doesn't look back for it, it's a penalty.
I don't have a problem with a referee taking a second to think about it before you decide, am I going flag there or not?
You're seeing more conferencing in the NFL. Which I would prefer to see.
Well, and you can't conference on a pass interference, but you can wait a second and say, all right, do I have pass interference here or do I not? I do. You know, I mean, that's okay if you do it that way. Rather than just spur of the moment, I got to throw it or not throw it right there. So I didn't – the fact that it is late to me isn't the worst thing in the world.
No, we can go back to was it that game or was it another game? Now
they
watching?
Call it. They,
it was a pass interference, and it was the Alabama game.
A lot of people
third and 23.
Yep.
It's third and 23. They throw the ball in the end zone. Alabama receivers grab the UT defender and pulls him down.
That should have been open.
And the guy, without any hesitation, threw the flag and said pass interference. He anticipated the pass interference, even though it wasn't a pass interference.
I thought it would be OPI.
That's what I thought it for
I
a minute.
It was off.
I'm like, that can't be a pass interference. Yeah, but they call it pass interference. Alabama fans ain't saying anything about that one.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because that would have been an opportunity. They wouldn't have had 7 points, right? Matter of fact, they wouldn't have had any points on that drive.
Yeah, and the thing is, look, I don't think this was a greatly officiated game by any means.
But how many of them are?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I thought there were some missed calls or some
and
calls.
That's usually the case, especially in a 52-49 game. Where there's a lot of fireworks, there's going to be a lot of close calls. But are you guys with me that a lot of times on a play like that, if the ball is intercepted, they will let the play go?
Well, typically...
Yes. Am I crazy to think that?
You're not crazy, but typically they don't call it if the guy that's a part of the play intercepts it. Now, if the guy that's covering the receiver, if he grabs him, tips it, whatever, and somebody else intercepts it, they more than likely will make the call. But if the guy that is sort of in the tussle with the receiver, if he intercepts it, then typically they're like, okay, they were just jostling for position, and he gained position and intercepted it. But if he pulls him down, the other guy gets the interception. From what I've seen, they typically call it, you know? So,
right.
I don't know.
Let's get to Daniel real quick on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, has perspective on that late PI call. Daniel, welcome in.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Good.
First and foremost, I want to say thank you for the University of Tennessee for having my crews and pilots on the field after the flyover. That most gracious host. So if they're listening,
very cool.
Thank you for that. Second off, I was standing in that end zone for the duration of the game, and for the first pass interference call, I was right there. I couldn't tell that was pass interference until I seen it on TV. Like, that it was not, rather. So I even thought that we had the pass interference. I'm a UT fan, but first and foremost, a football fan. Second off, to do with the flag, I think that ref, because I was on my hands and knees, like, that was pass interference, and it came out late. But as the other guy said, that guy never threw it. That ref never threw it. That's the same ref that threw it. I think he was trying to pay attention to where the interceptor's feet were, and like he was calculating all those calculations in his head before that flag came out. So I just want to throw out that was a good call. And then lastly, for the stats, I just want to throw it out to University of Tennessee. 101st did the flyover, and there was 101 points scored in that game. So bring us back for the next Tennessee Alabama game.
I like that. Hey, Daniel, appreciate it. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
That's awesome.
Very well done.
That's a good stat.
There you go.
Look, I there's going to be controversy, whatever. It was still a great football game.
It was.
And
most good football games have some controversy.
Right. I mean, that's just the way it is. So appreciate the call, participation. We'll get back into it in the 1 o'clock hour. But up next, NFL Zingers. Nick is ready. He's excited. But first, Derek's going to tell us about Cool Springs, MD.
Yes, I am. Football and controversy go hand in hand. Wouldn't you say that? Just like Cool Springs MD and men go hand in hand. And that's who I'm talking to. I need to tell y'all about Cool Springs MD. Over the years, more men have started to seek help for hormone deficiencies and imbalances. Dr. Jeffrey Lodge and his wife Daphne, along with their experienced staff, give men the treatment required to improve their quality of life. Cool Springs MD services have already helped many men of Brentwood, Nashville, that's including me, and the surrounding areas in Tennessee with improving their immune systems, energy levels, cognitive functions, and more. They are there to connect you with the medical care you require to have a healthy and enriched life. And who doesn't want a healthier life and have it more enriched? So, there's no better time to achieve a healthy lifestyle, people. What are you waiting for? Give Dr. Jeffrey Lodge and Cool Springs MD a call today for an appointment at 615-486-3458. That's 615-486-3458. Or visit our website at coolspringsmd.com.